Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to Third Stream View for Monday evening, July 18th. Now, we're pre-recording this show because sometimes it helps with the availability of my guests, so we won't be taking any calls, but we will have an interesting discussion coming up here in a few minutes. I would like to talk about things. As you know, the Republicrats and the Demopubs, some of you who don't know that what that means, that would be, of course, the Democrats and the Republicans. That is the one party, one government party with two heads, or the one bird of prey with two wings. They are putting their heads together and trying to hammer out a debt reduction deal and a way to solve the problem. You know, they're talking about a balanced budget. Well, you know, a balanced budget, that's fine, but not at the expense of raising taxes. If there's to be a balanced budget, it should never include the or allow the raising of taxes. And as I've said many times, to cut this budget immediately, they should end the drug war, end the war on drugs, abolish the DEA, bring all the troops home from overseas, close all foreign bases, cut the military budget in half right away. And contrary to what liberals and socialists and Democrats would say, we don't want to throw people out on the street or deprive them of their Social Security, which they've paid into, Medicaid and Medicare. Those are the last things we want to reform. And we do want to reform them, but not at the expense of anybody losing health care coverage or their retirement income from Social Security. We do want to reform it and especially cut the younger people loose from Social Security. And so there's ways that we can do this without hurting people, despite the frantic calls of, from the left or even Republicans who would say we want to throw people out in the street. We definitely do not want to do that. But that's the last thing we'll get to as far as reform. But before that, we can reform the budget by the things I suggested. Now, I would have to close a lot of federal agencies and fire a lot of bureaucrats. And my solution in the meantime for all these people that will be fired is I would give them their full pay and benefits for the next 2 years, which is still a lot cheaper than keeping the bureaucracies open and all the damage that they do to the economy. So I would immediately close many federal, abolish many federal agencies, bureaucracies like the DEA, the FDA, Department of Energy, Department of Education, Department of Agriculture, especially because every state already has a Department of Transportation, a Department of Agriculture, a Department of Education. We don't need to be paying double for all these federal agencies because, as we know, the federal government is nothing more than a very expensive middleman, a corrupt, inefficient middleman. So anyway, that's my take on an immediate way to really reduce the deficit. Now, today's discussion is going to be with a gentleman I've had on here a few months ago. He's a veteran, I believe he's an Army veteran, and he was recently got himself in some trouble for exercising his free speech rights, although out of a special zone. He was handing out pamphlets to all jurors, pamphlets which explained their rights as jurors, where they can vote to nullify the law. And he upset the local judge, who told them not to do this, issued an injunction several months ago about this. But since then, they've been doing it anyway, and the judge walked by him one day and said, have a nice day. So nothing was ever done about it. So now finally they arrested him for his free speech rights. So it happens to be the same judge who presided over the Casey Anthony trial. So his name is Mark, and he'll be on here shortly. We're going to talk about this mess, this dilemma. I have a few takes on maybe ways to fix this situation and try to remedy the problem he's in, because he has to go to court soon before this same judge, and he'll be telling us about it. But I've always been a strong proponent of fully informed juries. Hello, Mark, are you out there? I see that since we've last spoken, The axe kind of fell a bit, and I'm certainly with you on this whole mess, this whole deal. And just for the record, now you are an Army veteran, is that correct?
Yeah. Yes, I'm a vet.
And how many years were you in the U.S. military?
I was in the Army Reserve for 6 years.
6 years of service in the Army Reserves. Thank you for your service and for defending our rights.
Yes.
And this is the supreme hypocrisy of the whole deal. So you are out there practicing your free speech rights and freedom of assembly, all peaceful, nonviolent. You're handing out these jury information pamphlets to one and all jurors. And then you're arrested for basically exercising your right to free speech, which you defended as an active duty military veteran.
Oh, yes,
sorry,
that's correct.
Previously active duty military veteran.
Yes.
So I really resent that. I didn't serve, and I have no guilt about that. I don't think it's my duty or anybody's duty to serve, but all those who did, you know, God bless you and thank you, and I'm there to support you in your time of needs, and I just really resent the whole hypocrisy of this whole thing. And so you have a trial coming up concerning this.
Yes, that's correct. I go to trial on July 26th, Tuesday, and the charges are indirect criminal, which is a felony, contempt of court.
Wow. So, now, I understand that when you were arrested, they took your glasses away?
Well, what it was is right when I was arrested, I just fell to the ground and was unresponsive, so they may have just taken my glasses to keep me from hurting myself. But I felt that was the smartest thing to do because I didn't want the arresting officer, a lieutenant, to say I resisted arrest.
Right. How soon after did you get your glasses back?
Well, it took about a week to get them back.
It took a week to get your glasses back?
Yes.
Now, what is the logic in that? I think that's very, not only disrespectful, but that's like, to me, that's, it's also theft. And how dare they take your glasses away? I would use that.
The glasses are definitely an issue, but
I think it's a big issue. Sorry, I think it's a big issue, and I would also use that in your defense and at your trial. And I think this judge wears glasses.
Well, he does, but
you might ask him. You might ask him how he'd like to be without his glasses for a week.
I don't think that would be a good idea to ask Chief Judge Belvin Perry if he'd miss his glasses. Nah, I don't think I'm going to do that.
Okay, fine. Then you could say it this way. Well, Your Honor, I don't think anybody would appreciate having their glasses taken from them for a week.
Yeah, I agree, but that's
you
the issue
If you say anybody, I would definitely mention that. I would say, you know, I don't think anyone would appreciate having their glasses taken away from them, especially when they're not convicted of any crime. And even people who are convicted of crimes don't have their glasses taken away from them.
Yes, I know that. Sure. Yeah.
So, okay, I'm looking at my notes here. So, what? And also, I have a note that if... So you're facing, you could be facing some jail time.
Well, because it's a felony, the maximum I can get is up to 6 months in jail, and I'm not sure how much the fine is, but if I'm convicted of the felony, then I can't vote or own a weapon.
Okay, so if, and I'd also bring up the fact that, or you might ask him, if things go south, you might ask him, is this, you really want to put an honorable veteran in jail for any length of time, it's just to waste the taxpayers' money on this.
Yes, I'm agreeing because when you think of how many people we incarcerate in this country, I mean, we have more people in jail than all of China and Russia put together.
I know. I think as a percentage, I don't know if the numbers are larger per se. Maybe they are, but I know as a percentage we do.
Well, that's right. It's we're 4.5% of the world population, but we have 25% of all the people in jail in the entire world are in our country.
So you could be possibly another totally unnecessary person in jail who doesn't belong there.
Yes, because I'm nonviolent. You know, I don't fight back. I'm not even carrying a sign. All I hand out are pieces of paper.
You might even ask the judge if he's a veteran. I doubt he is.
Well, I don't know if he is or isn't, but I've retained a lawyer at a personal expense, and people are helping out covering the lawyer. But regardless, I probably won't be asking the judge anything.
Yes, yeah, I know, because they've got you in a vice. So now, what they have what is it? They have a marked off free speech zone near the courthouse. Yeah, well, is this how this works?
Yeah. What happened? Yes. What happened on May 4th with the Casey Anthony file trial coming to town? That Judge Perry he felt he needed to put in free speech zones, and these are two areas that have tape on them. They're about 9 foot by 33 foot each, and they're about 400 or 500 feet away from the front of the courthouse. And anything that his administrative order 2011-07 just says anything that has to do with free speech rights has to be in a free speech zone. And that's kind of a contradiction going in.
So you're going to certainly challenge the constitutionality of that?
Well, that's really what it comes down to, is I violated his two administrative orders, and the second one, which is the free speech zone, is unconstitutional. So there's no statute on this. It's just something the judge can make off the bench about basically about a whole lot of anything. And I do understand that he has to maintain order within the court, but I'm not in his court. I'm down on the sidewalk, and I'm not even sure if he controls that. But then coming back to the constitutionality of it, I understand where nobody can impede traffic, and you may have to organize if you have a lot of protesters out there, but I don't really fit into that category. And then the next issue is, by law, we're allowed to petition our government on the courthouse steps. But
true.
Then the other part of that is you can't impede traffic. So it's a little bit of a trade-off, but then when they make the free speech zone so remote, well, then I cannot get my message to the people.
I hardly think you were impeding traffic, and you weren't carrying any signs having anything to do with the Casey Anthony trial. In fact, nothing you had anything to do with the Casey Anthony trial.
Well, yeah, because what I deal in are things that have victimless crimes. And definitely there was a victim with the Casey Anthony trial. So I don't really fit into that group for anything. But
true.
I have been doing this since last September, so it isn't something I just started with the Casey Anthony issue.
Now, also, and I think I saw a video clip of this, didn't that same judge, Melvin Berry, tell you fellas to have a nice day not long ago, and you were not in the free speech zone, but you were handing out pamphlets?
Well, yeah, what happened there is I started, and other patriots started handing out the fully informed jury pamphlets back in September. And then on January 31st, Chief Judge Melvin Berry, and he's chief judge of the 9th District Court in, which is all of Orlando, Florida, Orange County, and the neighboring county of Osceola County. So he issued an administrative order 2011-03, which says that no one is allowed to hand out flyers, talk to, or hold a sign that refers to anything to do with a juror, and if they do, they would be held in contempt of court and for jury tampering. So he issued this administrative order on January 31st, and we quit handing out flyers worried that we would get arrested. And then one of our civil disobedient experts, Julian Heiklin, came down from Teaneck, New Jersey, and he handed out flyers, including trying to hand one to Judge Perry himself. And we took a video of that, and it's on Orlando Cop Watch on YouTube.
Was that when he tried to hand the judge one, were you in the free speech zone?
No, at that time, the free speech zones didn't exist. They didn't come about until the beginning of May. And this happened in probably April, I guess, March or April.
So what is your, what is you and your attorney's approach on handling this travesty of law?
Well, it's kind of up in the air how to handle it. Is we're not really sure how to handle it because the issues, first of all, there's two administrative orders. The first one, which I just explained, the 03 order, well, that right now is up in the 5th District Court in Daytona, Florida, and it's being challenged by the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union, and it's basically unconstitutional, but now it's still just languishing up at the 5th District Court. So we don't really know what the status is on that. And I think he felt, my intuition tells me that he felt it was unenforceable also. So he had to go to his second administrative order, which has to do with the free speech zones.
So you have the ACLU helping you out on this?
Yes, and I'm a member of the ACLU, but they kind of did it just on their own. To help FIJA, Fully Informed Jury Association, out of Montana, because it's just a very obvious assault on free speech. And all of us should know that free speech is the backbone of the Constitution.
Will you be mentioning the fact that you're a veteran and you defended free speech rights at your trial?
Well, I'm going to have to just trust my lawyer when to talk and when to shut up. You know, it's kind of...
Sure.
You know, now that I'm paying him, I'm going by what he directs me. So I don't know if that's going to be part of the plea. But some discouraging parts is last Wednesday when we went to the hearing for this case, we tried to get an extension, and Judge Belvin Perry just said an emphatic denied. So we're going to court on July 26th, like it or not.
Right, right. So, you've retained an attorney. Now, what is his background? Does he have experience in this sort of thing, or how was he recommended to you?
Well, he was recommended just by some other lawyers that couldn't take the time for the job. And he seems to have experience, and he's done a number of appeals. And because naturally, we feel the judge is going to find me guilty. Just so he can hold face. Now, I don't know if it's going to be a felony or a misdemeanor, but then I know I've got to appeal this thing, and that's going to be $5,000. So basically, we're trying to find the money. We know we're going to appeal it, and we really think I'm going to get some jail time, but I don't know how much.
So you're going to automatically appeal the ruling?
Well, as soon as we find $5,000, we will, yeah. Sure, because if we don't appeal this ruling, that basically means anybody that hands out anything, a judge could come down and just tell you not to do it, and then you could be handing out the Constitution of the United States, and he could just say, no, you know, I don't want you handing this out because it has to do with free speech. Or he can say, yeah, you can hand it out, but I want you to be in the free speech zone. And there's no limitation to how far away the free speech zone can be.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really a problem. Is this also considered legislating from the bench?
Well, it sounds like, to me it is, because there's no real statute on free speech. Like, there's a statute if you're speeding, and there's a statute if you know, you run a red light, but there's no statute for this. So it's almost up to what the judge wills to do or be, which is really dangerous for our freedom.
Well, I mean, so I don't know if this would work, but I mean, could you ask for a pardon from the governor?
Well, I guess you could. I mean, we can do all that stuff, but right now the immediate issues are for us to appeal this. We have to, at the time we go to court or before, we have to put in all the motions and have him deny it, the motion, because if we don't ask for something and then we try to appeal it on the grounds we didn't ask something, a motion, well, then we can't use that in our appeal.
Oh, boy. So,
you see how that one works? In other words, if you ask for something and it's denied, well, now you can appeal that. But if you didn't bother to ask, don't bother appealing something you didn't ask for.
Yeah.
And even what makes this a little worse is we wanted to issue a number of motions that we feel he would probably deny, but we wanted them on record that he denied them and then would ask me why. But he is allowing us to do that. So we just have to go to court and just do everything at once.
Right. But so if it goes against you, and he wants some jail time, is that automatically happen, or does the appeal, would the appeal delay that?
You know, I'm not sure about that, because this is still different than a usual case. Because in a usual case, let's imagine you got 10 days. Sometimes you can ask for a stay of execution to get your personal affairs in effect and then go to jail.
Right.
But since this is not a statute and doesn't necessarily have a lot of guidelines, it's real hard to figure out what he can do and what he can't do. Can I be out on bail or my own recognizance till this appeal is heard?
Right. So much for clearly defined law and order.
Yeah, it's really frightening. And then when I originally went to court, which was on July 6th, I was arraigned on June 29th, right during the Casey Anthony trial. And then on my first hearing was with him was on July 6th. And at that time, I thought I was just going to go in and plead guilty or not guilty, but he started hearing the case. So I had to object promptly, and then I asked him, I requested that he recuse himself, because basically he's the arresting entity, he's the judge and the jury, and there's no one judging him.
Right.
So he wouldn't recuse himself, which doesn't make any sense. And then the next thing is that I asked for a trial by jury, because that's what this is all about, is jury nullification and free speech. So, and he denied that.
Well, he's definitely clearly a statist, and, you know, he's part of that whole government system. You know, you're paid, he's paid through your taxes, plus you have to have a hire an attorney to fight him. You know, they're both lawyers. So the system is really rigged against the individual, especially if you're not rich. Then you gotta, you know, hire these damn lawyers so they can do their thing and try to get you through the system. It is a mess, and there's a lot of it that needs fixing.
I mean, this is a felony, and it clearly states in the Constitution that any criminal act, you have the right to be judged by a jury or your peers. But that isn't happening here. So he isn't really going by the Constitution. He's going by either his law or Florida law or something else. So it really is exasperating.
Well, I hope your attorney will, you know, make an put up a fight with that. Because otherwise, what they're probably going to do, maybe it's just like the divorce court where, you know, you'll go and they string you along, more court appearances, more money to the lawyers. They string it all along. I think he needs to, you know, make a strong defense right off the bat.
Yeah, I think so, too. But it's, you know, you just, you know, once you hire them, you got to trust them what they're doing.
Because it's, sort of like it's almost a crapshoot.
Yeah, it is a crapshoot. That's exactly what it is, especially since there's no statute. You know, I had no idea that I wouldn't have a trial by jury. First of all, I never thought I'd be arrested in the first place because he didn't arrest Julian Heitlin when he was down here. So, you know, we thought it was, the whole thing was moot. But anyhow, now we're back in this ballgame.
Well, since it's Melvin Barry, maybe if you showed up with numerous Obama 2012 buttons on your shirt.
Yeah, well, I don't know about it. I'd run that one by my lawyer. Yeah.
Well, regardless of what happens, I think you should make a big stink out of this with the ACLU, with any national media that will come, you know, put him on the defensive, make him look like the bad guy.
Well, I mean, we can try to do that, but you see, I don't know if it'll be that exciting or not. You know, I have no idea where this is headed.
Well, where it's headed is, you know, nationwide we're losing more of our rights. You know, this war on terror is an excuse to expand the state at all levels, and you can see it happening all around us.
Yeah, you can, and it isn't just what's going to personally happen to me. I mean, if I spend a week in jail, I'm not going to like it, but I'll still survive. But our First Amendment isn't going to survive. That's the overall problem.
Yeah, you know, plus the again, I like to come back to this, the added insult that you, who served our country, basically from, you know, threats abroad, the main problem is here at home. The enemy is overreaching government power, which is usually about 95% beyond what it's supposed to do by law.
I know, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense, because as me in the service, I swore an oath to defend the Constitution, and so did Judge Melvin Perry.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm still defending the Constitution, but he isn't.
Again, that's what I would like to say. I mean, if your lawyer went along with it, he'll probably back away from this. But, you know, you could say, when I was in the military, I swore an oath to defend the Constitution, Your Honor, and that includes free speech and First Amendment rights.
Mm-hmm.
How can you disagree with that?
I don't know, and I hope we can bring this all up in trial. But I don't know if I'll testify, or I don't know if we're allowed to just say, because the judge could easily say, "Well, you defied my administrative order, and it's not for if that's all we're going to talk about right now. We're not going to talk about if it's constitutional or not. You know, we'll leave that up to the appeal court."
Yeah, well, then you should have a valid answer for that, you know. So you could say, well, so my military service was in vain then, or, you know, whatever. It's, I'd still want to put him on the defensive. I don't know. I'd hate to kiss butt on this or have him just string you along with more court appearances and more legal fees.
Yep, I know. Yeah. And then it ain't going to do me a lot of good when they put me in jail. You know, then it's just more money for a nonviolent person to be in jail, because, you know, some of the staggering numbers here, PK, is like 40% of all the people in our federal jails are nonviolent. There's the key, nonviolent, small-time drug users. So, and we're spending $68 billion a year incarcerating people. It's a big business. So one way, we just can't afford this, and we're seeing that happening right now. One way, with the overcrowding in California, because a federal judge said they had to let a whole lot of them out because they were all living jammed up in really almost third world conditions.
Yeah, and I wanted to address that at the time too, because, you know, they're trying to scare people with that. Well, you know, they don't need to let out the hard criminals, the hardcore murderers, rapists, you know, kidnappers, all the violent crime, armed robbery types. They could let out the nonviolent evil drug users. You know, let out the nonviolent crowd. Keep the hardcore ones in prison. You know, but I think they want to make it sound like they're going to let the hardcore ones out.
Yeah, I think it's just another way of keeping everybody in fear. And then when they keep us in fear, then there's more of a tendency to just do whatever they tell us to do instead of really thinking this whole thing out. And that's really one of the reasons I started handing out the feature flyers, because it has to do with victimless crimes.
True. Well, that's part of a bigger problem, because fear, that's the word, the key word here, fear. And a lot of Americans, you know, they think they're brave and we got a mighty big-ass military, but there's a lot of fear in Americans overall. They fear what they don't know. They're sheeple. They stand in line, you know, and they're willing to accept more government laid upon them because they think it's valid law. And it just piles up. More laws, more violations to our rights, less freedom and less liberty.
I know, and they just continuously, I mean, keep us in fear, not to get off topic, but that's the whole reason I think they're doing the TSA body scanners, because they really don't do any good.
It is on topic, Mark, because it's part of the whole concept, the whole deal.
Yeah, I know. It's just another way to make us submissive to the tyranny of what our government is.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's way beyond its constitutional bounds. Well, you know me, I'm a very strong proponent of secession on an intellectual basis, which I've got outlined in my secession solution. And in fact, in my secession solution, fully informed juries are strongly included, because what the masses don't know about jury duty and jury service is that they can vote to nullify the law. They might not be able to change the law, but they can vote not guilty, especially in cases. And again, I'm never talking about the Casey Anthonys. I'm not talking about violent crime, murder, rape, arson, kidnapping, armed robbery. I am not talking about that, and neither are you. We're talking about victimless crimes, possession of marijuana, gambling, prostitution, even tax evasion. This is something that all the people who serve jury duty should know. In fact, we should know this in grade school. We should learn about our rights as jurors to overturn maybe not overturn the law, but to nullify the law through our votes of not guilty. Because in any courtroom, the jury should be the most powerful entity, because they represent the people, not the judge and the lawyers. They represent the state. And it really galls me that he's trying to deny you a jury trial. That's why I'm also a very strong proponent of fully informed juries, because they were also effective, I understand, during Civil War days, where juries refused to convict those who helped runaway slaves. And also during Prohibition, juries had refused to convict people who were in possession of alcohol or, trafficking, quote unquote, in alcohol. It's certainly an entity that's time has come, and I'm grateful to you for handing out these pamphlets and doing all you do, and I'm willing to pay the unfortunate price for it. I don't know what else to say. Someone's got to do it. You did it, and maybe something else good will come out of this. It needs to be more people need to know about this on a national level, their rights as jurors.
Yeah, and I'm agreeing with you. An example would be one of my sons, his fiance, just got a red light ticket in Napa Valley, California. And if she would contest that, and the fine, by the way, was $575.
Wow.
So not only can we judge the law, we're also allowed to judge, does the penalty fit the crime? So if she would contest that, and if I was on the jury, knowing what I know now, but not knowing what I didn't know before, is I would say, yep, there's a picture of her running the red light. She did the deed. She's guilty, but I'm nullifying the law and finding her, acquitting her because $575 is just plain too much money to run in a red light.
Definitely, and that's extra sad to hear because I love Napa Valley. It's probably one of my most favorite places in America. I love California. It's a shame to see how it's been run into the ground and mismanaged. And as far as so-called running the lights, I read something the other day, and I wondered about this. And then when I saw it in writing, I thought, huh, that makes a lot of sense. I don't know if you know this, but apparently, I don't know, local governments, city governments have also shortened the time of the yellow lights.
Yeah, I heard that too.
Because right. I've been saying for years when I'm out driving, saying to myself or yelling out loud in the car, you know, these damn yellow lights are too, these should have longer yellow lights. And I'm not saying that because I want to flaunt the law or drive irresponsibly. I just think that I've noticed it, and maybe not that I didn't notice they were shortening them, but just thinking, you know, these yellow lights should be longer to facilitate, you know, better trafficking and, more observation and compliance with objective law.
Yep, I know. Yeah, that's right. So just think of it. If they go ahead and they shorten the yellow lights, they issue more tickets and they make a whole lot more money, and that's really what it's all about.
Especially in these times of budget cutbacks and, lower revenues. Well, the government is, as my successful grandfather, mentor, entrepreneur told me 35 years ago, he said, the government is the worst manager of anything. And it's true. And I'm thinking also, well, here you go, Mark. Here is a nation. Correct me if I'm wrong. This nation has some tremendous business schools. And these schools teach finance and accounting, don't they?
Right.
You mean to tell me that these politicians and bureaucrats with their college educations and their doctorates and whatnot, their law degrees, they can't manage money coming from a nation with such tremendous business schools that teach finance and accounting?
Yeah, well, that brings up the whole other issue is, we all know, with all those degrees and initials laying behind them, especially people like Bernanke and all the other players up there, they know how to manage money. I think they just did it on purpose.
Yeah, well, I think there's a deliberate sort of a deliberate push to take this country down, and they're ruining it.
Right.
They've mismanaged the hell out of it. You know, right. I think that I could fix it tomorrow. I'd love to lead the Tea Party. I'd put the hammer down, throw the gauntlet down right away. At the top of my show, I spoke about how I would, I don't think you were on yet. We hadn't contacted you, but I would immediately bring all the troops home. I'd cut the military budget in half. I'd close all the foreign bases. I would end the drug war. You know, there's many other things that we can do to fix this problem without scaring people on Social Security and Medicaid and Medicare.
Yeah, but one of the big issues, when you talk about all of the issues in front of us, to make that happen, we still have to have freedom of speech, and now we're right back into that circle of what I'm doing, or we're doing.
True, true. Well, you know, they only want, they have a narrowly defined freedom of speech. In fact, a very narrowly defined political discussion they like. As the great Thomas Woods says, the modern Austrian school historian, who says that something to the effect of, yeah, all the status quo wants for us is a debate range somewhere between Hillary Clinton and Mitt Romney.
Yeah.
And so, you know, outside of those parameters, oh, you're an outlier, or, you know, you're a radical. Well, we need some radical change. And one of my things is that, yes, based on what I would do in closing a lot of these unconstitutional, unnecessary federal bureaucracies is, I would give the current employees their full pay and benefits for the next 2 years. Yes, you're out of a job. Here's your full pay and benefits. It's still cheaper than leaving the damn bureaucracy open and all the trouble that they make. So, yes, they could have their pay and everything. Yes, you're out of a job. But hopefully in the meantime, a rejuvenated private sector will absorb a lot of, you know, the former employees. But there has to be an immediate shift and a change in things. And the sooner, the better.
Yeah. Yep, I know.
Because I'm very, very fearful about the future and very pessimistic about things. We've never been in this sort of situation before. Yes, we've been in the Great Depression before, but there's other things now, you know, staunch competition from China and other countries, and the destruction of our currency. So, you know, I don't have any debt. I'm very in the black, thank goodness, but I'm still very worried about and very, very concerned about things. I don't like where this country's headed. I don't like what they've done to us, and I blame both parties. You know, the Republicans have been huge spenders. You know, in fact, Bush, I just read, Bush in 07, he signed legislation about these damn light bulbs that they want to change.
Yeah, I know. I read that one.
You know, so both sides do it. And it's funny how many people still think, you know, talk radio and the Fox News crowd, they think that the Republicans are going to save them. But they're just, you know, one side of the other coin. I go back to what Ayn Rand said in, I believe, the late 60s, where the only difference between conservatives and liberals or Republicans and Democrats is that Republicans and or conservatives bring socialism at a slightly slower pace. Because when you look at the two big parties, you know, they basically agree on everything except how much to spend.
Right. Yeah, I know.
So there needs to be some radical change. And, you know, even the Tea Party, as much as I like some of their ideas and outlooks, they've been heavily infiltrated by the neocons, and they've got their pro-war faction. Of course, they're going to vote Republican, pretty much, but they still don't get it. I mean, I know they're opposed to the spending, but they're probably not opposed so much to the military spending. And, of course, a lot of families have, you know, children or relatives serving in the military. I get that, but they need to look at the whole picture and the bankrupting process of what's going on.
I know. Yeah, they won't really look at the sacred cows. And besides that, you know, there's very little disposable expenses for the government that we can look at. But by far the biggest one is the national defense. Because they're claiming it's only $700 billion, but in the end, by the time you put in all the disability and the long-term stuff, it's really $1.2 billion per year, which is more than twice
trillion?
Of all the other countries added together.
You mean trillion?
$1.2 trillion is what the real number is for our for defense.
Yes, you had said billion. I was just gently correcting you to trillion.
Yeah. Yeah,
plus,
$1.2 billion.
Plus, as you know, there's a very high military suicide rate now, and there are thousands of troops coming back, and many that are here already, with massive wounds and injuries and maiming that, you know, is very expensive to treat and maintain, and also a lot of psychological problems and psychological scars and damage that the far-reaching effects of this will be with us for a long time. And in this fall, this war in Afghanistan is 10 years.
I know, and another issue on that, because it's 10 years, if you have a child that's up to 10 years old, that means they were at war their entire life. This country was at war. And then they'll just accept it as something routine. Like, we'll always be at war, so why are we worried about it?
True.
Well, we really don't have to be at war at all.
This country was at war throughout about half of my grade school years and all of my high school years.
Yep.
And the military-industrial complex, again, the Constitution calls for a defense, which both of us agree on. We want a defense of our country, but we don't want a huge, massive empire. And this huge, massive military-industrial congressional complex also sucks up precious investment capital that is needed for other purposes, consumer goods and other market-driven products. So, I mean, when you're producing all this war machinery, and, you know, a lot of it's sold to other countries or subsidized by us to other countries, you know, eventually governments and the military-industrial complex, well, they need wars or little civil wars springing up here and there so they can continue to have a use for all this stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, the mighty federal government and its mighty military, you know, they don't pick on big players per se, you know. Oh, it ain't nothing to kick, you know, to knock Iraq around or Afghanistan, even though they fought back rather valiantly and fearlessly. But, you know, they don't pick on Uncle Sam, don't pick on Russia or China, and hasn't much in the past either. They fought their little proxy wars in Vietnam or Korea, but they haven't, you know, picked on the big ones. Even World War II in Europe, Russia, you know, dealt with the brunt of the war. You know, and the federal government and its court historians and history books, they seem to leave out a lot of that, and they glorify the American role. And yes, you know, I support, you know, our troops fought valiantly and everything, but British troops fought, you know, a couple years in advance of them, and then you had Russia, you know, too. So, you know, Uncle Sam came around a little later. Uncle Sam was probably better in the Pacific, you know, carried that brunt all along. So it just shows you how out of whack things are. And, of course, history books are written by the victors and their court historians.
Right.
You know, so I'm looking at this whole picture. And I didn't even know this till about, seven, 8 years ago. This curtain started to pull away. It's like the cataract of history pulled away. And I'm starting to see how so much has been staged and manipulated by the globalists of the day and their friends in the media and politics and government and both parties. Come to find out later on, you know, the CIA has its tentacles deeply into the media, in universities. I believe they're now in Google, they're in Facebook.
The judge and the lawyers were allowed to talk to the jury about jury nullification with the individual jury being representing the fourth branch of the government. Naturally, we have the legislative, the executive, and the judicial branch. But
right.
The last branch is really the people. And they have the last say-so when it comes to a bad law because they can nullify it. Now, what happened is all the corporations got together and somehow went through government. So they told the judges that they would quit instructing the jury about jury nullification. So now nobody brings it up anymore, but they did used to bring it up regularly when they would seat the jury.
It seems to me that also handing out FIJA pamphlets would be good to hand out at all universities and community colleges.
Hey, I must have lost you here. I can't hear you.
Can you hear me?
Hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. I don't know how well your phone is doing. Are you still there, Mark? I think I'm losing you. Well, I'm gonna carry on here with some of my wisdom until maybe you get back on. I'll let the office know if they don't already. Hang on a minute here. Okay, they're trying to get you back. I just had this thought that I think it would also be very good to hand out your FIJA information, that is Fully Informed Jury Association, to community colleges and regular colleges. I don't know, probably not around churches, but any other, I don't know, PTA meetings, political rallies, town hall meetings, anything like that, which is a good way to get adults and young adults informed and knowledgeable about fully informed juries, because fully informed juries is a very strong way to nullify and maybe eventually overturn laws. But jury nullification is a great thing, and it should be taught in civics classes in high school. It should be taught in college. It should be something that everybody knows about. I'd like to see it enshrined in the Constitution. I support the Constitution. It has a couple serious flaws and serious cracks, which is the Commerce Clause, which has been exploited to regulate so much, and of course the Welfare Clause, which is a way to massively grow the welfare state. So that is a problem with the Constitution. I would rather see it reformed. Now, I know you need a constitutional convention. I mean, my whole thing is, I've designed my own secession solution, which is sort of based on our Constitution, only it goes further in restricting government power, and it grants no privileges to labor, big business. You know, there's no drug war. It just definitely, talk about chains of the Constitution, which Jefferson spoke of. My chains are very strong, and they're not designed to break, because there is no government power allowed under this system, which would destroy our individual rights. And again, fully informed jury rights are enshrined in the beginning of the civil rights part of the secession solution that I designed, redesigned. So, but I Washington, D.C., is, in my humble yet all-knowing opinion, it's an irreversible cesspool of corruption that cannot be reformed. Hey, Mark, you back with us?
Yeah, I'm back.
You notice how when I started talking about the CIA, you kind of faded out there?
Yeah, that's right. They probably came up, so they figured out how to cut us off.
CIA, which, by the way, stands for Cocaine Importation Agency.
Oh, yeah. Right.
And by the way, you can see very interesting footage, up-to-date footage on YouTube of American and or British troops in Afghanistan guarding the opium fields.
Sure. Something to talk about.
This is one hell of a mess. So I hope you like my style, kid, because I ain't afraid of dealing with any of these issues.
Yeah, just the only problem is the rest of America is, but maybe we keep talking about it, we'll get through. But I don't know at what part I dropped out of the conversation, but I brought it back to Fully Informed Jury Association and how the judges used to instruct the jurors about 60 years ago that they could nullify a law. I didn't know if you heard that part.
I think so. You know, I didn't know that. And while you were gone, I was touting the importance of fully informed juries and suggesting that you folks also hand out your flyers at junior colleges, main colleges, town hall meetings, probably not churches, maybe PTA meetings, all these other kind of meetings that adults and young adults would go to, where you might have people who would be interested. Also, probably outside of elections, when there's elections within X amount of feet of the, electoral places.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting where you got to be so many feet away, because then you can't get your message to the people. I mean, I always understand how you have to have order and you can't infringe on anybody's rights, but they really don't talk about the trade-off going on here where they can put you so far away in a free speech zone that you can't talk to anybody. So anyhow, but what I was lamenting about was prior to 60 years ago, the judge used to tell the jury that they were allowed to nullify a law. Well, what happened is the corporations got into this, and they pretty well got their way so the instructions that the judge gives the jury does not include anything that has to do with jury nullification. Now...
Yeah, that's a shame, and that should change. You know, I'm not surprised. Well, you know, statism continues to grow, and there's always a centralization effect where more power is sent to the central state and this and that. And why would they want fully informed juries to thwart more of their statist aims, all wrapped up in the flag and patriotism, of course.
Sure. Yeah, for the good of the country, they say. But when I started handing out these flyers, it was like what Gandhi said. Between September, October, November, December, and then came January when Judge Belvin Perry stopped it with his administrative order. Well, as Gandhi said, first they ignore you, then they laugh at you, and then they fight you, and then you've won. Well, in the end, I think we're going to win this battle, but right now they're fighting us pretty hard. And what has happened since I've been handing out these flyers, and by the way, I paid the money and printed them on my own. I handed out 10,000 of them. And wow. Well, not personally, but with other people near me, I handed out 10,000. But the judge now, after they seat the jury, what the judge does is go up to the jury before the trial starts and says, if it's illegal to eat a ham sandwich and the defendant ate a ham sandwich, would you find them innocent or guilty? Well, naturally, you and I would say, oh, well, you eat a ham sandwich anywhere you want, anytime you want, you know. Doesn't hurt anybody, you know, big deal. But if you answer it like, oh, I would find him not guilty, well, he wouldn't allow you to be on the jury. So one way the judges are tampering with the jury.
Well, I don't know about that, Mark, because, you know, Mark, I don't eat ham. You know why?
Yeah, okay, tell me why.
It makes me self-conscious.
Well, it might make you self-conscious, but we could use something else.
Because I'm a ham. You get it? I'm a ham. That's why I don't eat ham. That's an old James Cagney joke, I think, from some movie I saw.
I missed that one.
You mentioned the Gandhi thing. Reminds me of the other one about how truth passes through three stages. Ridicule, opposition, self-evident.
Yeah, never. I haven't heard that one. Ridicule,
opposition, self-evident.
Yeah, self-evident is correct.
And that can be said about the great Ron Paul and his warnings and his forecasting about things. You know, basically everything he said has come true.
Right.
About the economy, about the deficits, about the wars, about the Fed, about sound money. And, you know, he's resented for being truthful because, you know, people will usually forgive you when you're wrong, you know, but they often resent it and they won't forgive you when you're right. Not that you deserve to be forgiven, but there's that whole concept about, you know, the resentment about if you're consistently right, especially if you don't flaunt it or throw it in their face. Which Dr. Paul doesn't do, but he's been very consistent and correct all along. So I'm glad that things are different this time around for Ron Paul because more people have the message, and he's pretty much a front runner, even though the media continues to deny it and try to ignore him. But they can't do it as much or as well as they did it in 2008.
I know.
You know, so that is something that I'm going to always work towards. I worked on his campaign in 1988 and then in 2008 and now. So I'm going to continue to go down the right path because we have truth on our side. And I'm sure that Dr. Paul is a big friend to jury nullification. Plus, he's not an attorney.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, he's definitely friends of jury nullification, that's for sure.
And even though he's a medical doctor, he's a friend of holistic medicine. And alternative medicine.
And the other issue was with Dr. Paul, he's the only one so different than Obama that could beat him. Because the other Republicans running, there ain't a whole lot of difference between them and Obama. There's some difference. You know, they're Republicans, I guess. But they aren't really taking a solid stand on this stopping the spending, because that's what's got to happen, and that's also one of my problems with the Tea Party, is they're addressing like the fair tax or the flat tax or one of these, but they aren't addressing the spending, and that's where the problem is. It isn't in the income, it's the spending.
They address the spending, but they're vague. They're not well informed about it. They know something's wrong, but they can't speak in specifics, and I've had some quote-unquote clashes on Facebook with some Tea Party types when I've thrown defense out there and this and that, and even the drug war, and they, you know, they don't get it about that. They're not looking at the whole picture, and as a self-proclaimed free market economist, I look at the whole picture. That's why Dr. Paul, being an Austrian economist, a free market Austrian school economist, you have an overview of society and how it functions. And that's another good thing about Dr. Paul, because he has this economics background. A president should have a very good knowledge of free market economics and an overview of society. So, and with that, I got to wind down here, my friend Mark. I appreciate your time and letting us contact you again. I'm there to support you. You have all my empathy and respect and appreciation. And thank you for what you do. I don't know what the outcome is going to be, neither do you. But, contact me in the future. I'm going to do what I can to help you. I've spoken to you offline about this. I'm happy to send a donation to your legal defense. Keep up doing what you're doing. You might have to do it somewhere else. Again, I was thinking schools and, community colleges and this and that. But thanks again for coming back to Third Stream View. I appreciate it. And I appreciate your military service, even though, and I say it, I'm jokingly, but not disrespectfully, that even though you served, they're screwing you here at home, and it's a damn shame. So I wish you all the best with your trial and your appeals and the whole deal. So until next time, everyone, this is your host PK signing off at Third Stream View. Please join us again next Monday evening, the same time, same place, here at bbsradio.com.